very much. It's nice to be here in Cork, even though I wasn't here for a while, but it's nice to be back here again. I think I was to be about 27 when I started writing poetry. It's very late by comparison with most people, I think. But even at that time, I wrote this poem, which I think I should read for you again. I'll read for myself again for the first time. It was called Poetry, A Career. Kind of a warning to poets, maybe. So I'll go with that, first of all. Dogged by whatever happens, happens. It is not too much to direct that you drop everything and run off with the first girl's eyes you remember, if she is still around, for testing your love, and this time determined to see it through. Failing that, to stand in a public place and with a total disregard for tact, tell everyone you meet exactly what you think of them, of their blindness, their politics, and their God. They will question the state of your soul. Then, before the police arrive, make for a favorite mountain top, where, armed with no more than your voice and a skinny will, lie down in the heather and surrender yourself to sky. If you catch your death, it will have been all worthwhile. No matter, it is a formative process and it takes time. So, I see that Donegal will be facing up to Cork soon in the football semi-final. Sorry, I thought I should read a poem that had Donegal in it. This is one about airing blankets in Donegal. Some of us went up there to for holidays. We're staying in this place which hadn't really been aired for since the previous summer. And so I thought it was wise to put out a few of the blankets on the line and air them, because it's been a sunny day in June. So when I looked out at them, this is what I saw. Now they are galloping, with the wind up and the sun on their backs. Such Cossack fury, horse and rider, impossibly won, snorting and kicking, hanging on for dear life. A flogging will release the itch of dampness from their veins. Ears pricked among the stony hills, their bright colours excite with thoughts of giant bats coming in squadrons. Will they ever settle down to lying comfortless on a bed after the chase and the effort to edge even half ahead. Now that their tails up, I haven't the heart to take them in, although I fear they will carry grudges with them to the grave.
Just read one more from this one, then. An early poem about my niece, my niece who was born in England, and it's a long time ago now since I wrote this, but it was very important that she was nearly five, so those nearlys make a big difference when you're small and full of imagination. So I suppose she's really reminds me of the imaginative child, or the child of the imagination and all of us. So let me see if I can just find it. Yeah, here we go. So my niece, nearly five. Cramped conditions favor her at four. She twirls on a sixpence into dance routines unrehearsed, broadcasts original compositions through 15 yards of green hosepipe for silent millions. Highly amused at her lightfoot sense of fun, she delivers speeches to her great-grandchildren perched on the fence, berating infants and mothers alike. If you can be trusted, she will impart 100,000 secrets only she knows, giving everything away. In the night sky, she is the star, beguiling your exhausted world with fantasy. The logic of your departure is beyond her, but having squeezed the life out of you, she whispers goodbye inside your jacket, where the lining smells of you.
Well, we're still all on board. Okay, so I'll just read you a couple of other bits and pieces. This is kind of sort of humorous. Basically playing on the idea that, you know, we all want to be somebody, and if we can't be somebody, we know somebody who is somebody, or we know somebody who, you know, etc., etc. So this is a brief history of being somebody. Even before I was born, my parents wanted me to be somebody. Be someone, they whispered, half asleep, while I slept on, tongue in mouth, minding my own business. Fat chance of that. For journalists are always on the lookout for seismic shifts, cosmic farts. A primal yell as they upgrade you in a flash from nincompoop to head girl. Getting out of the womb, Houdini-like, went down well. There were tears, and I was somebody to be around, with milk on tap and sniffing talc. I was distracted when they warned, don't end up like your Uncle Pat, a dancer like Alice, a waster like your great-grandfather Bill, he who drank two farms and a grocery. Don't be like them. At the christening, the first rabbit priest in the parish confides, shit happens, and then, remember this, you don't exist any more than anyone else. And that was it. A brief history. Yeah, just since we're in the Olympic kind of mood and sports stuff and all that. Mm-hmm. I remember it was 10 years ago when we qualified for the World Cup, and I wrote this the morning I heard it. I called it the forecast, but the morning that the draw was made to see who we were going to get. So if you're into this kind of thing, you might remember this. And I also like this because I got the forecast right too. So, forecast 2001. I suppose it's really all about, you know, does it really matter where the borderline falls in? So this morning, the draw was made for the World Cup, but you had headed off to see your godson, though the forecast was snow in that direction, laden with cards and presents that couldn't keep. Saudi Arabia, Cameroon, Germany would form our group, and we were pleased.
No France, Argentina, Sweden. Maybe Senegal or South Korea might give us notions of easy success, though there wouldn't be more than a kick of a ball between us. Hailstones start up like the tap-tapping of a neighbour's hand on the window pane, with the thought of you on high ground, fields withdrawn for the season, boundaries gone missing from the map, your car stalled halfway up a snow-packed hill. We should progress with two draws and a win. Which we did, by the way. Since we're just talking about kind of infancy one there, I thought I should read you one. You know, sometimes we forget that that our species is only one human species, that there are other species of human beings as well before, but unfortunately they died out, became extinct. We seem to have survived so far, but who knows. And I remember years ago a friend of mine, he had a life-sized picture, so far as you could have one, of a Neanderthal man on his wall, and I was very impressed. And they've found bones belonging to Neanderthals and so on. It's interesting to see that we share some of the DNA, so obviously they were around, we were around, and mingled with them. Anyway, this is called Bone of My Bone. So, thinking of close family members here. So, Neanderthal, our oldest, coldest case, despite the best of us, forensic style, nurse in white apron wondering, what crossed your mind at first light? Did you call out, Dave, or sigh? Raise your arms to be lifted. You, half-sister, our family secret, a little slow, so sent away to school. Yet times when weather pits itself against our being here, I sense the chill of lame hands and feet, small cries, lullabies, before spring arrived too late and you have disappeared, leaving only bone for us to study, your posture, profile, pedigree, your alphabet, humanity. One of the things that's been noticed is, men can be quite reserved emotionally towards each other until they get into a sports arena or on a sports field, and then they can be all over each other, hugging and kissing and everything, and changing their jerseys, etc. It's amazing. So it was that kind of thing that came into this poem that I'm going to read you, called Dress Circle. But it's, you know, all the different ways we why dress makes such a difference to us, how we dress and cross-dressing and everything dressing, I suppose. So, dress circle. It seems to have started early, is gilding the lily in her glad rags and sequined gown as he throws something on, whips something off, like a priest in the vestry, Amos, Alb, Cincture, Stone, Chasuble. She leaves him with blood on her favourite brow. Let's play hospital, says the child, walking the tightrope in mum's high heels, with a skipping rope draped around her neck. On the field of play, the fullback strips and swaps his sweaty shirt with the half forward, half kissing his ear. In Notre Dame, they ban the miniskirt and dipping tops, insisting on a homespun, one-fit party dress of the soul. There's a poem here that I think is appropriate for the day that Katie Taylor did so well, though. It's just that the images fit, but it's really about something else. But it's okay. I think it really is about something to do with domestic violence, I suppose. I'm not supposed to say what things are about because they're all about more than they're supposed to be about. Well, this was called A Few Hard Knocks. I'm going to dedicate it to Katie Taylor's feature. One, no matter what, stand up to the day. Two, take the kids out, warn, rebuke. Three, batter them with words of misspelled love. Four, rinse your mouth out, spit. Five, allow for the sucker punch. Six, inhale, recover, avoid the mirror. Seven, from the pro-cathedral, a bell rings, and eight, he is there, handsome in a white silk scarf. Nine, in the corner, getting dressed. It isn't all that clear. Ten, just how good you are. Sometimes from my window, I'm looking out onto kind of a depot where a lot of stones and stuff are dropped off by the Dublin City Council. And often I've noticed one or two men, sometimes just one guy, and he's taking a cobble in his hand and he's chipping the cement off it. These are stones that have been dug up from, say, some street, and now they're going to be recycled, so they just need to be kind of cleaned off, and so chip off the cement off them and then throw them aside so we can get them in. So it's just kind of hard work, you know, especially when you see a big pile of them in front of you. So I call this poem Migrant. It is, after all, a job to the man who stands on a mound of stones with a hammer in his hand. He has been at it for hours, chipping bits of concrete from cobbles, then tossing them in a bag for the next collection. At intervals, the yellow dump truck arrives, bleeping in reverse, and pours out another load to keep him occupied. Mostly he sits in his orange vest and hard hat, like a penitent in a prison yard, tapping for all he's worth. But when he straightens and climbs the hill for a better view of somewhere else, he is David with a slingshot, Sisyphus in a dream of ease, a farm boy shutting out the farm. is a poem here which I should really maybe dedicate to Paul, who has spent a lot of time in South Africa, because I wrote it out there. I was visiting a place called Gordon's Bay, which isn't too far from Cape Town. And there's references to another place called Hermanus, also in the same kind of area. And there's a little epigram, you might call it, I suppose, the beginning of it, from a white South African poet called Ingrid Jonker, who had a kind of tragic life, really, very much parallel to Sylvia Plath, you know, very intense poet, kind of very up and down sort of life, emotionally, who eventually took her own life, aged about 23 or so. And but the early part of her life, when she was with her mother, the father sort of abandoned the family fairly early on, and this child lived with her mother, with another sister and mother and grandmother, and of course they lived in great poverty, but the child was kind of unaware of the trauma so much, but just enjoyed herself and loved swimming as well. So it was ironic that she died by drowning. Yeah, anyway, that's just kind of background to the poem, but it's called End House, Gordon's Bay, and I was staying in this place called End House because it was at the end, very last house, just leading on right beside the sea, the water, and at night time you think the water was coming over you. So quite an amazing thing. So these are just like six little, almost like postcards, just impressions of where I was. End House, Gordon's Bay. So the epigram, right, this is Ingrid Jonker. Actually, when Nelson Mandela gave one of his first public addresses and he came out of prison, he quoted her as well, one of her poems. Washed out my body lies in weed and grass, in all the places where we once did pass. Ingrid Jonker, Escape. Morning and evening we unlock, then lock, the length of chain across the driveway. Not that we've seen anything suspicious. The juice from the crushed berries by the gate sticks to our shoes and makes a mess inside. Avoid them. It's not our house. At night, the sea insists on a big presence and covers us with the sweepings of the floor. So far down, we dream and dream. That red stain across the water you noticed on the way to Hermanus is not shark food. I've made inquiries. It has a name. Evenings taking the path through gnarled trees to the restaurant. Listen, a man persuading a woman. Laughter round a fire. Wave fall. Backwash. This close to the edge, we feel inclined to put down the book and undress. To swim out with no thought of return. I had a good friend who died, Michael Morn, and at the time when he coming, you know, he got cancer. So visiting him and so on, I often had time on the journeys to think about what was going on, and I wrote a couple of poems, which I might read for you now. They have a general application, of course. One of the things Mick said was he knew his days were numbered, and he was in a coffee shop with his wife, Martina, and it was a bad old day, and the door opened. And then the wind and rain blew in this man who kind of announced to everybody, that's a miserable day. And Mick turned to Martina and said, there's no such thing as a miserable day. And this kind of draws out something around that. at looking at things differently. Days like this. There are days you feel blessed at another's achievement. His eventual rise to a post, her reaching across you to accept the winner's check, his clearance at the doctor's and not yours, her credentials lauded, his position kept, hers closed. Her smile, the one that clinches it, his hand gripping yours, meaning, don't let it get to you. Her sly wave from the windswept window as she turns back to her desk and glances at him, his youthfulness trumping your underused years. Her fullness, his aftershave, her pension, his voice on radio, her strings in the string quartet, his son playing rugby, her daughter following mum. Blessed for no reason, but that this late April, the doctor has allowed you home for the long weekend, and it's raining outside. When people are sick, sometimes their friends and people, religious maybe mindset, bring them something like a relic that might just help, a reminder of some kind. This is a slightly humorous sort of look at that, but when I'm thinking of my father, when he was sick, but. Point being that there was no finer relic in the room than himself. It's a relic with, I mean that in the best sense, by the way. Even though he was dying, he was a living relic in the good sense of the word. Last night I consulted my dying father. "I'm worried about you," he said. He had seen me fumbling on the floor, having dropped the precious relics meant for him, which broke and scattered. He could tell I was wondering, how am I going to put them together so that Anthony is really Anthony, the little flower, her true self. The splinter of the cross, not some dusty lookalike. With trouble ahead, trying to return them to the donors, we could probably tell their original from a fake. No first class from second best. Notice a scratch they hadn't seen before. We would soon be testing a fragment of bone on the next sick heart. Cancer rout, trickle in the brain, and expecting results. His back was skeletal when I moved in and touched him. Just read a couple more. That's it. Just read it two more, just one here called The Long Room Trinity. Another bit, library room in Trinity College. You can wander in there on your way going to visit the Book of Kells or something. You don't even have to pay anything to bring here. You don't have to go as far as the Book of Kells. But it's just the smell of the wood reminds me of something. When time is short, let the museum suffice for a sense of narrative. What went before? What next? Or the gallery for reassurance that this is the business and your 10 minutes adequate. but for the sweet smell of now, the library. Here, drop off child and shopping at the door, and breathe woodland. Your whole life clarified for what it is, scribbles on a leaf, guesswork. First go at a plan. I'll just read one more page. Sometimes the poems go hiding on you. I don't want to be read. This is called Lodger. I suppose for anyone who's moved around, you know that sense of you're no longer gone and you're kind of forgotten. Something like that. Yeah. Lodger, ground shifts and I am somewhere else. Change of address, street lighting, loud stairs. Once there was a hand squeezed in a father's by the curb. Then hair oil, knotting one's own tie and shoes. Then boy astray in a mist of chalk dust. Homesick for the first time. Later, it becomes a habit, polished by goodbyes. Window panes more or less dirty. Doors that close with a thud. Neighbors whose greeting can't hide their reticence. The last place wiped clean of you in a day and someone else moved in. Who are you? A voice inquires when you return in a week to collect your things. Each morning, the fluid self solidifies for another go at being somewhere, checking these clothes for size. And in the kitchen, finding the kettle still warm. Thanks very much for listening.